Foundation presents The Doctor Zen. You've got questions? He's got answers.
Dr. Fleming, so you're loading up the vehicle and putting the camping equipment in there and the poles, and you're going to go up north and work on your foreign policy, because last time I checked, what you said, your foreign policy, especially in Afghanistan, was fish or cut bait. Now, is that true?
It certainly is true, although I don't know how much policy I'm going to be using on the fish I don't catch up there.
Oh, well.
This is the worst time of the year to go fishing. Look, Rex, you know, if I have one specialty, it's the study of language. I'm not an expert in any one language. I know several languages pretty well.
Sure.
And the one thing I've learned is that you have to start by calling things the right name. Well, so for example, if you got a really expensive boat with 80 horse on the back, with sonar and every kind of stuff, and we went zooming up and down around a lake and thrashing the water with $50 plugs, and didn't come home with anything day after day, is that fishing?
No. My brother used to complain if I clomped along the side of the shore.
Yeah.
He said I was scaring fish away. But let's get back to this Afghanistan, or maybe it's what you would define as your own foreign policy versus the American foreign policy. I'm a little confused about what our foreign policy is.
Okay, good. The term foreign policy is confusing. It's like we used to say, in the case of fishing, are you going fishing or are you going catching? Now, I don't mind going fishing if it's in a trout stream and I'm having a good time, but basically, after 3 days of that, it's time to fish or cut bait, go home.
Right.
Foreign policy is a fancy word that has replaced the old-fashioned word diplomacy. When we come up with these fancy words, we are, first of all, lying. We used to have a department of the cabinet called... He was the Secretary of War.
Secretary of War.
The Secretary of War was... Yeah. You know what that is. Secretary of Defense? That's a little more vague. How about Secretary of Health and Human Services? We come up with these very bogus and confusing titles. Now, there was once a very famous German general and strategist, one of the most famous in history, named Clausewitz. And Clausewitz famously said, diplomacy is war carried out by other means. Now, what he meant by that is, of course, diplomacy can get you into a war or out of a war, but basically you have the same objective. War is the use of aggression, and the purpose of a war is either to defend ourselves from an attacker or to punish somebody who has violated our own security or has done something harm to us. War has a clear objective. So diplomacy, or this bogus term, foreign policy, which is very confusing, diplomacy has an objective. See, foreign policy is something you get a PhD in and you talk endlessly, whereas diplomacy is you negotiate a treaty that does some good for your own
people. Okay, so foreign policy or diplomacy, are these the differences that got us into World War I, World War II? Are we talking about foreign policy or are we talking about diplomacy that had those wars? And what about the UN and all of this? Are they diplomatic or are they foreign policy oriented? Again, I'm confused.
Well, again, a lot of the confusion comes because if we say we're going to fight a war for the following objectives, people say, oh, you're just going to steal oil in Iraq and it's naked aggression. Whereas we live in a world where we have organizations and laws to protect human rights. Those laws and institutions, those agreements are complete falsehood. Why do we have international law and international business relations? Why do we have all these international treaties?
Keep peace all over the world. Come on.
No, it is so that a very small multinational ruling class can rule everybody. You see, when you got little nations sticking up and say, well, what about me? Where's my cut? Oh, no, you don't get a cut. The people who get a cut are the friends of the Bushes. Or the there is an elite class of a couple of thousand people in the world, and only about half of them are Americans, and they decide war, peace, and they decide
what's
in...
Is this like a conspiracy theory? Illuminati?
No, they're completely open about it. They're completely open about it.
Okay.
Oh, they lie to us, but if you read things like Foreign Affairs and other magazines or journals devoted to the study of foreign policy, it's very clear that world peace for them means the rule by a narrow elite that eliminates competition.
Well, that's because we're smarter than you, and you'd screw it all up, and we're
smart.
Right,
exactly. Yeah, and that's why the government of the United States is so much smarter than the poor rubes who live out in the sticks. People like us who wonder why, for example, we have to wear a mask under certain circumstances. Why all of this. A lot of the argument in favor of a new world order, which is a George H.W. Bush favorite term, a lot of it is to criticize nationalism. But nationalism is only a small and usually somewhat perverse aspect of what I'm talking about.
Me and my country, right? Yeah. Nationalism.
You and your country, as long as your cause is just, as long as you're really pursuing the interest.
It's always just when you're in America.
Wrong. Now, if we were to ask, what is the purpose of our federal government in looking at foreign policy, for example, or anything else? Well, we do have a defining statement, and it's not the Declaration of Independence. No. It's the preamble to the Constitution. The preamble to the Constitution says its purpose is, quote, to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterior.
I love that.
Put in basic English, and you know, this the English of today on the evening news, the basic purpose of our government are, first, keep the country together so, you know, Canada can't grab part of it, Mexico can't grab another part. So keeping the country together, provide civil and criminal legal system, which will offer punishment of criminals and protection of the innocent.
That's been a little off the rails lately. Go ahead.
Yeah. Prevent riots and disruptions such as BLM and Antifa have been
doing.
Although, again, none of our governments are doing very good on that.
No.
Also, defend a nation against aggression, foreign aggression, and in general provide the possibility for ordinary people to go about their business without being bothered by anybody else. That's domestic tranquility.
I like that.
Now, some of this is involves domestic policy, but a lot of it, especially common defense and the general welfare clause, involve our relations with other countries.
Then what's the purpose of diplomacy?
It's to use means other than war to defend the interest of the United States and its people.
Hmm.
In other words, it's not world peace. It's not to end communism or stop male chauvinism, protecting women from men who make them wear burkas. The goal is the same as the goal of a war. In other words, we want to keep what we've got, and at the very least, we don't want to lose our advantage in the world.
Well, I think we're trying to be the world police, of course, and we're trying to do the right thing, the American thing, but there are definitely wars that are unjust.
Yeah, like just about every war that's been fought for 150 years by the United States.
Oh.
Now, there are, any action or activity in which individuals or nations take part, it can be just or unjust. For example, I can kill an intruder who's trying to murder my family.
Yes.
That's just. And similarly, if we're invaded by a foreign country, we have to kill the invader. Similarly, if somebody takes my property and the police go and get the property back, if it's not my property, it's theft.
That's
reasonable. Similarly, there are just wars and unjust wars, and this is not the time to talk about just war theory, but basically just war theory says, as at a minimum, the cause is just and it's doable. In other words, there's no point in rising up and saying the state of Rhode Island can take on Red China.
Oh.
And thirdly, it has to produce not more harm than good. In other words, it has to be proportional. If you say, well, my cause is just because that guy stole $100 from me, I can beat him, but I might have to wipe out 8,000 people. Well, that's disproportionate.
Right. So you've got this term foreign policy, and it's still confusing me. I'm lost here.
That's because the term is sort of abstract. It suggests some lofty pursuit conducted by experts at Harvard or something where they sit around and talk about the theory. And instead of foreign policy simply being a mechanism for securing benefits and advantages to our country and to our people.
Okay.
Part of the problem in English is the way, again, we tend to misuse language. For example, we've taken apart a word which in Italian is politica, and it goes all the way back to Latin and Greek. In Italian and other languages, the two concepts of politics and policy are the same, or they're closely related.
Huh.
Politica, in the sense of a policy, means a line of conduct. The purpose of it is to secure benefits for the people who you're negotiating for.
Okay.
So that's policy.
Yeah.
But in the sense of politics, it indicates the means by which we secure those benefits. I mean, in other words, we have a, how do we do this? We have elections, we have a Congress, we have court system, we have all of these things. Now, there's an old American political proverb which says that politics stops at the watered edge. If you think about it, this is really meaningless.
Hmm.
If policy is a means of finding the advantage and naming what our advantage is, and politics is the means by which we get it, then obviously it doesn't stop at the water's edge. But what we mean by politics in America is two sets of gangsters. One set are called Republicans, the other set are called Democrats, and they quarrel and lie, cheat, and steal, and slander each other because they're trying to see who gets more of the boodle. They get the more of the boodle domestically by controlling tax policies and regulation, and then they involve us in foreign policy snafus and acts of aggression, which of course means that people like Hunter Biden get a whole lot of boodle from the poor, suffering people of the Ukraine. And I mentioned this before in some of our podcasts. If you look at who sits on the boards of directors of all these companies that are making money in the Middle East or making money in the former Soviet Union,
mm-hmm.
It's every Secretary of State, every Secretary of Defense, every Secretary of Commerce, every Treasury Secretary. All our top people are engaged, and once they're retired from office, Madeleine Albright, for example,
mm-hmm.
Henry Kissinger, are engaged in looting the victims of U.S. aggression.
Okay, so we've got foreign policy, and I think I'm starting to get the difference between diplomacy and foreign policy. So your foreign policy, as we said in the beginning, is fish or cut bait. What does that mean?
Okay. If we're no longer fooled by the liars in the media and in power into thinking that foreign policy is something that promotes human rights, or that we're waging war on terrorism,
mm-hmm.
or to protect women, we would have to decide every time we were considering an act of aggression, whether the act of aggression were an embargo on a country or actual military engagement,
mm-hmm.
we'd have to decide if it were, especially if it would lead to war, would it bring tangible benefits to Americans that would be worth the risk and manifest loss of life and money?
Okay.
We've lost a lot of lives, huge amounts of money, billions and billions and billions of dollars over our wars of unjust aggression against Iraq and against Afghanistan. And yet, if you asked, what do we get out of it?
Yeah.
Nobody can tell you.
No.
Now, a few people got out of it. You know, Blackwater got out of it.
Right.
Various people.
The war machine always wins.
Yeah, sure. But, I mean, if you're talking about the American people or the parents of children who were killed over there, much less the people over there, it's pretty much a lose-lose situation for the bulk of the human race. Not, of course, for the people who run the war. Not for people like the Bushes and Clintons,
mm-hmm.
Obamas, and
Now, you
Bidens.
Have to admit that if we are attacked, like what happened at Pearl Harbor, that was pretty obvious. We are involved. Now, you attacked us.
That's
you
right.
brought us in. So we're there. But what about other wars like Korea, Vietnam? Of course, Afghanistan and these other wars that we sort of just got involved in.
We deliberately brought on World War II. There's no doubt about that.
Hmm.
Roosevelt was doing everything he could to bring on war with Germany to help the English. And he was being manipulated by Winston Churchill. I don't blame Churchill at all.
Hmm.
The British people had every reason to drag us in. And his behavior toward the Japanese was such that people like Douglas MacArthur knew and said so, that his policy would bring us war, and at the same time he was cutting military defense spending.
Hmm.
However, on December 8th, 1941, we had no choice. You know, in other words, it doesn't matter what we said. It's like you're in a barroom brawl and you call somebody a name and he pulls out a gun and shoots you.
Right.
You see, that disproportionate response means your friends are going to have to take it.
On December 7th, we get this terrible, terrible thing.
That's
December
right.
8th, first thing in the morning, guess
That's right.
what?
That's right.
There's
no
going to war.
And by the way, Charles A. Lindbergh, who was totally opposed to America getting involved in World War II, he volunteered.
Oh.
Because once your country's attacked, then the discussion of policy is over, and there's only one thing you can do. Now, I do remember Korea, and I remember very well Vietnam and some of these other wars. I didn't know why we were in Korea. We were in Korea to stop Korean communist aggression. Well, the question is that was a sphere of influence which was dominated by the Soviet Union and by China. You know, okay, we created the Republic of South Korea, and then later we created Taiwan, and these have become, and I'm not in favor of abandoning them because we've made them our allies. What was in our interest? What was in our interest in Vietnam? And especially a war which we got into under false pretenses. The Gulf of Tonkin resolution that was supposed to respond with aggression to North Vietnamese attacking our shipping, it was a lie. It never happened. And my friend Admiral Stockdale, who was the senior aviator in the air at the time, said it didn't happen. Nobody believes that it happened. An American captain panicked, and so they used that as an excuse for getting us into a war. Why were we there? Initially to protect the French colonial empire. Then it was this, then it was that. And, you know, at one point, we sold out the pro-Western Catholic government to the Buddhists, who then murdered the Catholics and ran an extremely corrupt government and lost the heart and minds of their own people. And eventually we got out under somewhat less discreditable circumstances than we're getting out of Afghanistan. But if you don't know why you're there, you can't do certain things. You can't define victory. What would victory in Vietnam look like? Well, see, if I were sending troops to Vietnam back then, under Jack Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson, victory would mean we conquer Vietnam, we kick the communists out of the north, and we tell the Chinese, you set one foot in here, we're going to blast you.
Right.
Now, that's victory.
Yeah.
Well, if that's not victory, then it's just endless war of attrition in which you say, well, they can do anything they want to, but we can't hit certain targets. We can't commit certain troop levels. So we never defined victory. We never gave it our all. That is, we never tried to win. And then we couldn't define that we had no exit strategy other than people jumping on helicopters off of rooftops.
Every time American soldiers are killed on foreign soil, the politicians say these soldiers have not died in vain. But what you're saying is there's a lot of false pretenses that we went over and fought wars. Did they die in vain?
Well, these are politicians. Politician, as a famous poet said, is an arse upon which everything is sat except a man. Don't trust anybody in politics unless you know them very well personally and you can judge their character. These people are paid liars. They are in it to feather their own nest. That's their only objective. They will tell any lie. And one of the biggest lie they tell is when we send Americans to some godforsaken place like Afghanistan and they get their legs blown off by landmines and various other explosive devices, which have been there, by the way, for decades. The Russians mine the place. The Afghans mine the place. We mine the place. We get these guys blown up, murdered. I've read one account where the French came and investigated what had happened to a French NATO group. They had first been sodomized until they were half dead, and then their heads were cut off and they were dismembered. Did they die in vain? You bet they died in vain. Every single person who dies in a war just to put money in the hands of the American political class, they die in vain. Not only do they die in vain, but they die doing something that they don't realize is completely wrong.